it's that.
Well, there's words on loving kindness and Instagram. This is what
should be done by one who is skilled in goodness and who knows the path of peace. Let them be able and upright, straightforward and gentle in speech, humble and not conceited, contented and easily satisfied, unburdened with duties, and frugal in their ways, peaceful and calm, wise and skillful, not proud and demanding in nature. Let them not do the slightest thing that the wise will later reprove, wishing in gladness and in safety. May all beings be happy, whatever living beings they may be, whether they are weak or strong, omitting none, the great or the mighty, medium, short or small, the seen and the unseen, those living near and far away, those born and to be born. May all beings be happy. Let none deceive another, or despise any being in any state. Let none, through anger or ill will, wish harm upon another, even as a mother protects with her life her child, her only child, so with a boundless heart should one cherish all living beings, radiating kindness over the entire world, spreading upwards to the skies and downwards to the depths, outward and unbounded, free from hatred and ill will, whether standing or walking, seated or lying down, free from drowsiness. One should sustain this recollection. This is said to be the sublime abiding, by not holding to false views, the pure-hearted one, having clarity of vision, being free from all sense desires, is not born again into this world.
Thank you. Okay. Now focus your attention on your own meditation subject, whether that's the breath, or four elements, or any kind of meditation subject that you've used successfully. Just focus your attention there. If you can keep your attention focused on your meditation subject, the Dharma will enter your heart. So, I think today I'll talk about merit. What exactly do we refer to when we talk about merit? It's a word that we hear consistently in Buddhist circles, or we will make merit. We'll do something to make merit. But what exactly does that mean? It's actually not as clear as you might think. We say, oh, we'll make merit because it's the right thing to do. Or we'll great merit because it's going to give us good results in the future. Both of those two statements are true. But where exactly do we store merit? We think of merit as, well, like good or bad karma. Good karma is merit, and bad karma is the opposite of merit, demerit, if you want. But when you look inside your heart, when you're meditating and you look to see what is going on when you do things, when you see things, when you hear things, when you watch with mindfulness, where do you find a drawer or a cupboard or a shed or a barn or a warehouse that's got this merit in it? Where is the pathway leading to this store of merit that goes up when you do something good and gets docked a few points when you do something not so good? Where is it? Search high and low and you won't find it. Merit itself could be thought of as just one aspect of karma. And karma itself depends on intention. As the stream of consciousness knows various sense objects that arise via the five, six senses, we react, our minds react to that sensory information. And part of that reaction is that we intend to do something as a response to that sensory perception. And when we make an intention to do something, to think something, to say something, to do something, that's when karma is made. Karma is the same as intention. And then we get the results of karma that come sometime in the future. And it could be the very near future, it could be mid-term, it could be sometime way off. And exactly how that mechanism works, nobody really knows. But you don't have to know the intricate details to know that it does work. But first you need to have faith in karma. Because if you have no faith in karma, if you really don't believe karma works at all, then why are you practicing meditation? Why are you bothering to try and improve your own mind? You could say, well, I just want to be peaceful now because it works in the present, and when you die, and that's it, and that's all I want out of meditation. That's fine. For those people, if that's all that they want to do, that's fine. But if you're practicing Buddhist and you ultimately want to achieve some sort of freedom from suffering, then you need to take karma more seriously. Because if you believe when you're dead and nothing else happens, then what incentive have you got to do good? What incentive have you got to keep your mind pure? What incentive have you got to wash your mind of greed, hatred, and delusion? The cankers that cause all the suffering in the world. There was once a prince at the time of the Lord Buddha. And he went to see the Lord Buddha and he thought, oh yeah, he's just another of these sort of ascetics come along. And he paid his respects, sat down to one side and said to the Buddha, look, what I think you believe in karma or something like that, or you get born again or don't you? Isn't that what you teach? Wasn't the Buddha, I think it was Sariputta, Lord Buddha's lieutenant. And the reply was, we believe in karma. That the law of cause and effect, that if you do well through right thought, right speech, right action, that results will come in this lifetime or in another. And the prince said, I think when you're dead, you're dead. And he said, I've had friends, people that I know, that have died. And he said, none of them have come back, even though, you know, I'd be interested to know if there was a life after death. But look, none of these people have come back and said anything to me. So as far as I'm concerned, when you're dead, you're dead. So Sariputta said, suppose you had a friend and that friend was born in a heavenly realm. And in that heavenly realm, he had all the pleasures that he wanted. Everything was soft music playing, sensual pleasure, everything he wanted. And also, in that heavenly realm, one day in heaven, in that realm that he was reborn, was the equivalent of 100 years on earth. Now, do you think if your friend was born into that environment that his first priority would be coming back to tell you that he was born in heaven? Or do you think he might have other priorities for the time? And even if he were to think of you sometime down the track and one day in heaven was worth 100 years on earth, you'd be dead by the time he came back to tell you anything. So that would be a waste of his time. Wouldn't that be true? And the prince had to acknowledge that, that's probably true. But then what about the other side of things? No one's come back to say there are hell realms or that there's anything else besides this existence. So the reply was, suppose that person was born straight into a pit of effluent, a pit full of pus and excrement, and in that pit live savage beings that would tear you apart and rip into you, and you were going to be like that for the rest of your karma, the rest of your time in that heavenly realm, in that hell realm. So if you were born into that pit, if your friend was born into that pit, do you think that if he said, just hang on a minute to these beings that are going to rip him apart and drag him off into even more feces and sludge that are in the hell realms. He said, do you think those beings would say, oh yeah, mate, no worries. You can tell your mate back in the human realm that he's all right. I got reborn. I suspect that those beings are probably not going to let you do that. So the prince had to acknowledge, yes, okay. That's probably true. So this idea that some friend or other will come back and tell everyone that, karma works or karma doesn't work, or that there is life after death, we judge by our own standards, but they're not the same standards that apply in those realms. And so it was a fallacy for the prince to think that someone would bother to come back and tell it. So that doesn't prove that karma exists, but it does present an argument for those people who believe that when you're dead, you're dead. So, when we talk about merit, what exactly are we talking about? Well, in some ways, merit influences the stream of consciousness. So much so that when you do good things, the results from that are also good, wholesome. And when you do think things that are unwholesome, the results are also unwholesome. So exactly how that works, I certainly don't know, I don't lay claim to. But I do believe in cause and effect, and I don't see death as being a reason why cause and effect would suddenly break. So let's establish and let's acknowledge that karma works. Karma, the law of karma is true. So what then do we mean by merit? Well, first thing people say is, well, you should be charitable. And from a Buddhist perspective, that's certainly true. That's the first source of merit, to be charitable, to give, to be unselfish. But giving alone is not the entire story as far as merit is concerned. So certainly when it comes to being charitable, because to really gain merit, to really have an influence on your stream of consciousness that is karma and is results the result of karma vipaka, you have to give with attentiveness. And it's better if you can give with your own hand. You don't just ring up and make a donation, thinking that, well, you know, if it's all right, good, if it's, you know, help somebody, yeah, well, that's fine. But you're not really that interested. You're simply making a donation. And inattentive in the sense that there's lack of consideration for the gift that you're giving. Then the results are not that meritorious. You may make some merit, but really, to fully engage and get the best out of giving, you give because you want to give. You give attentively. In other words, you're mindful of what you're doing, and that's where intention comes in. And you give a gift that is appropriate to the person to whom you're being charitable. And also that they receive that charity with a wholesome mind. If they don't, then that too impacts the merit that you make. And the Lord Buddha, he once said that in one of his past lives, he was a Brahmin. And he accumulated a huge amount of wealth, and he wanted to make a gift. So he prepared 84,000, this is what it said, 84,000 trays of gold, 84,000 trays of silver, 84,000 lounges, 84,000 bales of cloth, 84,000 maidens, bedecked with jewellery, of fine jewellery, food, I think 84,000 elephants, and you get the picture. But he had no one really to give it to. And what he's saying, and what he said was that even if you only give some food to someone who has entered the path, a sotapanna, then you make more merit in that one act of giving food than does someone who has that major gift, that magnificent gift of all that gold and silver, if they can't give it to the right person. Now, Sotapanna is the first step of sainthood, if you like, from a Buddhist perspective, if you want to look at it. If you were to try and sort of compare to what we would say in the West, because they freed themselves from the fetter of belief in a self, in this body, that they have freed themselves of doubt, and they freed themselves from a belief that if through rites and rituals you can obtain enlightenment. These are the first three fetters. And when they enter the path, when their meditation is strong enough that they can see clear enough, then those three fetters disappear, and that's a sotapanna. And if you give even just a little bit of food to a Sotapanna. That's better from a merit perspective than it's 100 times better, the Lord Buddha said. Then he said, even if you feed someone who's a non-returner, a once-returner, that is someone who will only be reborn once because they have destroyed the first three fetters, plus they've also overcome ill will and they're close to renouncing all form of sensual attachment. If you give them some food, you feed them, then that the amount of merit made is 100 times more than feeding a Sotapanna. That's a Sakidagami. An Anagami is a non-returner. They're not enlightened, but they won't come back to this realm before they are enlightened. They will live the rest of their work out the rest of their karma in the heavenly realm, and that's because at that stage, they have eliminated all five of the first five fetters. And if you give some food to them, that is worth the merit is 100 times greater than the merit that you gain from feeding the Sakidagami. If you feed an arahant, a perfectly enlightened being, then that's a further hundredfold greater merit that you make. If you feed a Pacheka Buddha, a silent Buddha, one who is arisen in the world but doesn't teach anybody, then that's the merit made there is 100 times greater than feeding an arahant. If you feed Sammasambuddha, one who is self-enlightened and proclaims the Dhamma, then you make another 100 times more merit than what you make through looking after a Pacheka Buddha. If you feed the Buddha and all his retinue, then you make, again, 100 times more merit than simply feeding the Buddha alone. So these 100 times are starting to build up a bit. If you build a kuti, build a hut for a monk to stay in, and you dedicate that dedication itself will, again, be 100 times more merit than simply feeding the Buddha and all his retinue. If, on the other hand, you start to acknowledge and believe in the Dhamma, and you take the Buddha, the Dhamma, and the Sangha, the Buddha, his teachings, and the noble ones that follow him, if you take that as your refuge, then again, the merit is multiplied by 100-fold. Having taken those three refuges, if you then take the five precepts, not killing, not stealing, not being sexually promiscuous, not being not telling lies or being untruthful, and not taking intoxicants, if you can keep those five precepts, then your merit is 100-fold more than that again. If you practice meditation and you can free yourself from ill will, even if it's only for a split second or for a puff of smoke, that you can have goodwill towards all beings, then that's 100 times more merit yet again. And if you practice and you can see the arising and passing away of moments of consciousness, if you can see impermanence, even if it's only for the snap of your fingers, then that merit is worth more than all of the other things that I've just spoken about added up in total. So there's a hierarchy of merit. And as we practice Dhamma, we put in the right effort, to try and gain merit, to try and remove from our character those unwholesome traits that we have, and we try to stop more unwholesome traits from arising, and we try to maintain the good, wholesome traits that we've got and try to develop new ones. As we engage in that process, we make an intention to get rid of the unwholesome side of our character, and we make the intention of generating more wholesomeness. And that's how we make merit. Where that merit goes, as I said at the beginning, how that merit turns into good results in the future, again, a mystery. But it's something that you have to try and understand, at least at a gross level, so that you understand that karma does work. Because that's the only way that you can actually understand how birth, old age, sickness and death actually work. So you have to understand karma at some level. But the deep, intricate way that it works is too mind-boggling even for the Buddha. And he's basically saying you don't have to. You only have to know at a gross level that it does work. If you cause and effect works, cause and effect is a universal law. So while there may not be any storage place within the heart that you can point to, you can't go and order some merit on Amazon or go and order some merit and have it delivered like Menu Log or Uber merit delivered to your house. It doesn't work that way. You have to practice. It's all generated through right intention. You have to have the right attitude. Your intentions have to be good, and then your stream of consciousness will head in the right direction. If your intention is not good, if your actions, your thoughts, your speech are not good, your stream of consciousness will head in the wrong direction. And so for all of us, it's incumbent on all of us who want to be free from suffering to practice with right intention and to try and eliminate the unwholesome side of our character and try and develop the good side of our character. And if we do that, we'll build merit and we'll make progress in the Dhamma until ultimately, if we keep going, we too, at some stage in the future, whether in this life or in the next or in the next or the next, we too will be free from suffering. Here one, that's enough for me. So, we'll practice some meditation. So, take your meditation subject, refresh your concentration, your mindfulness, focus on the meditation subject, and while you've listened to me speak, whatever you think of the talk, good, bad or indifferent, let me tell you that the best teacher is your own body, your own mind, especially the body. Why? Because the body is, compared to the mind, the body is gross. The mind is fleeting, hard to catch, hard to shackle. But the body We can feel the body, we can be aware of the body, we can see it decaying before our eyes. The body's much easier to focus on. So it's much easier if you've got a meditation subject that's linked to the body, such as the breath or the elements, or seeing the body as being parts and taking it apart and looking for a self within the body. Which part is the self? Am I my arm? Am I my finger? Am I my lungs? Am I my heart? Am I my brain? What happens if I take all these parts out and put them in front of me? See in your mind's eye what that looks like. That's a good meditation subject. Because it's easier to keep your mind on it than trying to keep track of your feelings or trying to keep track of your thoughts. So your best teacher, this body, will teach you all about suffering. It will teach you all about the cause of suffering. It's the best teacher you've got. And you take it everywhere you go. So every waking moment that you have an opportunity to learn. The body will teach you about suffering. Just sit for long enough and see what the pain in your legs is like. Suffering. And go without sleep and see what that's like. Suffering. Go without food. See what that's like. Suffering. You know, the body depends on food. The body depends on water. The body depends on air. It's conditioned. And anything that's conditioned is suffering because we can't control those conditions. We think we can, and that's part of the delusion of this world. So focus your attention on your meditation subject. gradually feel your breath coming in and going out. Just feel that state of relaxation. And slowly bring your mind back. Open your eyes. And come back to the normal world. One thing that I could have also said with regard to merit is that one thing in Buddhism, and I mentioned it last week, is the sharing of merit. Sharing of merit and wishing that other beings can participate in the merit that you're making. Sharing it with them, wishing all beings can actually avail themselves of the merit that you're making, is a form of giving. And it's an interesting concept in the sense that it's this whole idea of not being self, that even this merit doesn't belong to me. Even this merit I can share. I have a neighbour whose dog died there a week or two ago. And he was very fond of the dog. And so he was very upset when it got run over. And he was upset and he was saying, oh, you know, I miss my dog and this, that and the other. I used to take it on walks. I used to do this and it used to come on my lap and all this sort of thing. And was really quite upset by the whole thing. But if you flip that and you look at it from a Buddhist perspective, he was looking at that situation only from his own perspective, because he missed the dog. And so it was the gap in his life that he was really talking about, that he was really sad about, because it was what the dog gave to him that he was missing. From a Buddhist perspective, if you look at it and you say, well, that's the end of the karma for that dog. So now he's got a chance to build, the dog's got a chance, actually it was a she, but she could now have a chance to be born somewhere else and maybe have a better life. And if he'd have been thinking like that and thought to himself, and these good thoughts, I wish the dog, that I wish that it's been reborn well, that I wish that it's free from suffering, he would have made good karma for himself also, but he could have then said, and may this dog, Princess was the name, may Princess also share in this merit. May Princess be reborn well. May they share in the merit that I'm making today. That's a Buddhist perspective, to not hoard merit, if you like, but the more you want to share it, the better it is. But he's not a Buddhist, and he didn't look at it that way. And so he was looking at it from the point of view of what the loss meant for him. But he wasn't looking at it from the point of view of the opportunity that the dog had to actually get reborn in a better life and to take the opportunity to share merit. And so I don't know any other religion that actually does that, takes that perspective of sharing merit. And it's something, it's a form of giving which is important because, again, like I said, you're not looking to hoard merit. You're looking to try and make all beings everywhere share the merit and have all beings everywhere try to overcome their unwholesome side, their greed, their hatred and their delusion, and try and develop the positive side. If everybody did that, if everybody just did that, looked after their own well-being, so everyone tried to eliminate greed, hatred and delusion, think what the world would be like. Certainly a lot different to what it is now. Anybody got any questions? I can't explain things that well. Someone's got to have some questions somewhere.
It's a matter sort of stored in memory or the chitta?
Merit. Well, Yes and no. I mean, it's not stored in memory, but obviously you can remember the things that you did which are meritorious. And this
some
is
it.
Sorry?
Some of them, not all of them, I think.
Yeah. This is particularly important when you die. When you die, what happens when you die is just before you die, one of three things happens. You see something which you did in your past, which is either meritorious or not, or you have a vision of that, or a feeling about it, or something that reminds you of a particular piece of a particular action that you did, or a particular thought. So it's either the actual thing or something that gives you the impression of that. Or the third thing is that you see a vision of where you're going to be reborn. And that's why it's important to be mindful at the time so that you get the right one of those when you die. But then that's where karma can then influence it, because what happens then is the first moment of consciousness when conception takes place in the next realm, that same thought moment, that same thought object, I should say, is the same as your first thought object in your new life. So the last object that your mind perceives when you die is the same as the first object that your mind perceives when you're reborn. And so that's why, from a merit perspective, it's really important that you have as many, you do as much as you can, so you've got as many chances as remembering something that's good, rather than if you've accumulated a lot of bad karma. But yes, how it actually works, I don't know. I'm not smart enough to fathom that out yet. But even the Buddha wasn't, so I'm in good company. He just knew enough. Knew more than any normal being, but he knew enough to know that cause and effect worked. And exactly the intricate details of how it works, not necessary. You just need to know enough of how it works. Okay, looks like it's over to Bill again, unless anyone's got any more questions.
Now let us chant the verses of sharing and aspiration.
Through the goodness that arises from my practice, may my spiritual teachers and guides of great virtue, my mother, my father and my relatives, the sun and the moon, and all virtuous leaders of the world, may the highest gods and evil forces, celestial beings, guardian spirits of the earth, and the Lord of death, may those who are friendly, indifferent or hostile, may all beings receive the blessings of my life. May they soon attain the threefold bliss and realize the deathless. Through the goodness that arises from my practice and through this act of sharing, may all desires and attachments quickly cease and all harmful states of mind until I realize Nirvana. In every part of birth, may I have an upright mind with mindfulness and wisdom, austerity and vigor. May the forces of delusion not take hold, nor weaken my resolve. The Buddha is my excellent refuge. Unsurpassed is the protection of the Dharma. The solitary Buddha is my noble lord. The Sangha is my supreme support. Through the supreme power of all these, may darkness and delusion be dispelled.
Thank you.